Does anyone have a question or anything to share?
You asked us to ask ourselves about what are we really, or who are we really?
This would be good.
Yeah, that wasn't it.
No.
I couldn't remember.
Anybody remember?
I know they didn't sound right. That's why I'm asking.
From the guided meditation?
Yes.
Oh, in the guidance?
Yes.
Oh. I still don't remember.
Was it about the words? Like, what is your deepest wish? Was
yeah.
It came in a few different ways.
Yes, and it was partly that. It's it was what...
If it really were your life, and it is.
That's it. Your life. Okay. That's the word I was missing. Your life. Thank you.
I thought you meant in the time after the meditation, the questions.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
No. Nice to see you. Anyone else?
In the beginning of the week, you talked about nakedness, and the next day you talked about connection. Are they really the...
Can you say more of what you mean by connection?
Well, you didn't. I was actually curious what you meant by
connection. That's kind of like, I have a question. What was the question?
you spoke about how through our education we sort of disremembered or we lost our connection.
Mm-hmm.
So my understanding of connection is sort of that sense of not being separate, losing sense of self.
So let's talk about the connection part a little bit more first. I think another way to feel into what I meant by connection, which you just described really well, is trust. And it's not trusting someone or trusting something or even trusting a specific way that's already there, but rather something that could find a way that isn't there yet. And I think that trust allows nakedness. And I don't know if we can do it the other way around, so I don't know. I guess in a way we have to, because we don't have trust. We got broken, mostly. And so we experiment with a little bit less hurrying to cover up, and we find that it's okay, and even there's ways that it's wind in our sail or wing, and what we always wanted, and yet it's what we always wanted and needed, and still something closes from that we want and need. And so that kind of process of testing out trust. And it is very much related to what I had in mind to speak about today. Just to feel into moments where there's okayness just by itself, and so then there's not a movement to confirm that we're okay. That's what I mean by trust. And in some spiritual language, and from the Indian spiritual tradition, especially some of the Buddhist traditions, talk about groundlessness. But because we're broken, the brokenness doesn't take away our deep wholeness, but we are also broken. Our connection to our equipment is broken. We could easily hear that list that I mentioned at the end of the talk yesterday. So like presence or receptivity, where we and the world are together, or curiosity and wah, or that really clear seeing straight to the bottom kind of energy, or rapture or bliss, or deep ease, like such a looseness in the joints that we can really feel the deeper gravity, the deeper pull. And all those other little pulls can't get us. Can't hit the reflex. And deep meditation, so not being pushed and pulled, we fall into deep meditation. And then that word equanimity, which yesterday I was calling like love of death, love of storm, love of life, love of aliveness, and staying true to the aliveness and a caring for the aliveness. So we could easily hear that list, seven factors of awakening in the Buddhist tradition, and think, that's not for me, I'm not there yet. Maybe I can check beginning little bit taste of one or two of those, but I've never experienced all of those. And so we have a dual practice, so that the experience of non-duality can happen. And that's that we practice finding ground and feeling grounded, feeling support, being in the body, feeling okayness. And then, so from that side of practice, from practicing ground, we find that as we start to sometimes feel, oh, actually I can feel that the earth is supporting my body. So I don't know, for some people that happens from the very beginning. For many of us, I kind of feel like I'm on the earth, sort of. And then some days I can really feel that I've relaxed in, I've kind of dissolved into a little puddle in a good way on the ground. And there's a meeting. And so, and in that meeting, that's actually experience of non-duality. So we don't want to go one-sidedly towards the word and teachings of groundlessness only, because we're so kind of startled in our system that we need to practice from two sides to come to the same place. And because it's true, because groundlessness is true, we can practice ground, and in the actual experience of ground, as all the layers of it as we come in, it's so alive and real that it reveals groundlessness, or shiftiness, as I said yesterday, as a different word for emptiness. So part of what happens in resting is that sometimes we find ourselves trusting the ground, not in a mental way, but we feel that the body and the ground are in a good way together. And that, in a way, needs to kind of come first, so that then there's an adventurous spirit can come back to us, and we feel happy to meet the unexpected. One of my teachers, who was a great storyteller. And loved telling stories. And each time would be slightly different what happened. Which is a tradition also here in this part of the world, probably everywhere. But this story was pretty simple, so he couldn't go too far with it. And it was just that there was a woman and her daughter who came for teachings, came to meet him in Lucknow, India. And the mother somehow just sort of immediately got it, so to say, and was in touch with the non-dual reality. And both my teacher and this mother of her daughter were so wishing for the daughter that she could also experience. And so my teacher had two apples, and he just put the two apples out, and then he took one apple away. And he was a very powerful character as well as spiritual presence. He had tattoos on his arms. And he was in his 80s, but he could bring... there was a man who was 6'3" or so, in good fit shape, who Papaji could bring him down. Just walking down the hallway, "Oh, I'm tired, I'm ready for bed. Let me hold on to you," walking down the hall. "Oh, are you okay?" So much mischief is needed. And then he just took the other apple away. And she got it, so to say. Just the... nothing to focus on, and yet somehow very focused. So with this trust, I like the phrase from that my favorite book that I mentioned yesterday, Yog Vashisht, the trickle of trust, a trickle of trust. So that doesn't sound like that big list that we'll never get around to, be big enough for or whatever. Just a trickle of trust. When something that we were really counting on is suddenly gone, we can be left with an openness. And it's something, there's something about the care, and there's something about the false dependence on something that's not that reliable. But having the trust be there, that we fall kind of into that trust rather than just flat. So there's someone, you thought they liked you and they don't, or you didn't want to like them and you do, or you've always been a jogger and your ankle won't jog anymore. All the many ways that things that we rely on are suddenly or gradually gone. And the chance that gives for us to fall deeper if there's a trickle of trust and not just a complete shutdown. Or I can say not if there's a trickle of trust, but if we know how to recognize and we've learned how to follow that trickle of trust. So I think there's a kind of nakedness in both ground and groundless practices or events, situations. Because we might like to dress up in spiritual ideas, and then we find actually just feeling my legs is all I need to do all day today. And it's so not fancy and not clever and not exciting and not covering anything up. The bare simplicity of that. And again, that leads right to that. Is it ground or groundless? The simplicity. And then the confidence grows enough that we have a willingness to actively give up the covering up and let things fall into place in a way that's pretty electric sometimes, but also humble, like not fantastic so much. And then confidence grows even more because we find that there is something juicy that doesn't need confirmation, and that with too much confirmation, we lose track of. I'd like to just kind of for fun read a Mary Oliver poem. It's called In Blackwater Woods. Look, the trees are turning their own bodies into pillars of light. Are giving off the rich fragrance of cinnamon and fulfillment. The long tapers of cattails are bursting and floating away over the blue shoulders of the ponds, and every pond, no matter what its name is nameless now. Every year, everything I've ever learned in my lifetime leads back to this. The fires and the black river of loss, whose other side is salvation, whose meaning none of us will ever know. To live in this world, you must be able to do three things: to love what is mortal, to hold it against your bones, knowing your own life depends on it, and when the time comes to let it go, to let it go. To move into our situation, whatever it may be, and in all its shiftiness, without holding back. And so the nakedness is the no excuses. The situation doesn't need to be better than it is for us to move fully into it. So if, in Mary Oliver's words, the three things that we must be able to do to live in this world, to love what is mortal. I think that's I'm calling trickle of trust. So to love what is mortal is even if there's also absolute truth on fire in everything that's going on, it's no excuse to just avoid moving into our situation. And as we move into it, it shifts, and we move into our situation, and it shifts. And so the trust gives us the chance to, or the not holding back, we can say. Then she says, the second thing, hold it against your bones, knowing your own life depends upon it. So not because it's empty that we would walk on eggshells or kind of tiptoe around. But in that presence, continually the presence of death, it gives us permission to love anyway, to discover that love loves anyway, or that trust trusts anyway. It doesn't trust something to last forever. So I'm not sure that trust is the right word, but I haven't found another one. I don't know if anyone has another word. It would be great if anyone does. So have you had moments today where you noticed what you would have done before was some kind of covering up or not staying with that either electric or simple or humble or all three? And then even if what usually happens is after less than 1 second, we're kind of kicked out. And we can kind of come back and kicked out. And we can also kind of put down our arms. Give a little bit more wide and loose and fluid space where we can allow that alignment to come up, or to allow that humble, electric, naked, connected space or shape or. This week I'm feeling it more like shapes than space, but spacious shapes. We can allow that to kind of build itself. If sometimes it feels like we're kind of trying to stay and getting thrown out and sort of almost like collecting ourselves around Stonehenge ruins or whatever, and letting it come back to life. And there's a hard part. I'll just start by reading part of this description by Chuang Tzu. It's describing a person of Tao. So I might say a person of Dharma, but still, what does that mean? A person of life or liveness. The one in whom Tao acts without impediment, without obstacle, without breaks. The one in whom Tao acts without impediment harms no other being in action. yet does not know oneself to be kind, to be gentle. So as genuine kindness and gentleness starts to come up, we're the last ones to know it. And so that's what can be hard. When our genuine equipment as human beings starts to come into place and get to actually flow and act. It's so non-harming that, first of all, it doesn't hurt us, so we don't notice it much. It's like clothing that fits really well. We hardly feel. We feel naked. And the fact that it's not hurting others, we also don't notice at first. We don't notice at first that there's some less unnecessary chaos. There's some less repetitive friction. There's some less collision. Because there's no problem, we've trained ourselves not to notice. And then even kindness and gentleness, it's sort of the same. The presence is so natural to a human being, even though rare. And the action is so, tends to be towards harmonious and kind of minimal. It's not trying to show that I'm kind and gentle. That's what we're used to. When we feel kind and gentle, and when we act kind and gentle, there's usually some genuine act and some kind of like, to myself and to anybody else who's willing to play. So it's a groundless act, like it comes out of nowhere and we follow through, but also we hope to get some ground with it and by it. It's not our fault. It's just an addiction that we're slowly unwinding. So don't worry when you keep stumbling on that. But if we could at least know that the times we assess ourselves and see, we notice the aggression and the friction and the, certainly we notice the stumbling. We probably need to ask somebody else who knows us really well for a long time, rather than ask ourselves how it's going. And those connections with people that we've known a long time who know us really well, who care, and where we're met, so that's rare, first of all. And where that is in your life, please give energy. We're almost trained to ignore those people. I should take out the word almost. We are trained to ignore those connections in this culture. And there might be a couple things going on there. One is because there's not dynamic, there's not power dynamic, we're not entangled, we don't trip up on that connection. And so it's easy to forget. Also, the care is a free-flowing, I would almost say entity. The care is almost a free-flowing entity in that connection. We don't have to be good to get it. And so we forget. One way sometimes is it feels like our cells remember that care and need that. But usually we wait till we're desperate before we'd be actually ready to do whatever it takes to be with that person or to connect inwardly or outwardly to that person. I think there's also an element of awe. Because it's a personal and impersonal connection. It goes beyond what we are used to thinking of me, myself, in relationship to a you. And there's a kind of attention there. There's a kind of tension there. And we easily take it as a bit insulting when someone doesn't just relate to me as me and you as you. And that, again, ground, aren't we? We're equal here. And if we're not, then we must be unequal. Our thinking goes incorrectly. We incorrectly think that if we're not just you and me equals, American style, both of us could be president kind of thing. Right? If we're not just equals, then we must be unequal. And I must want to get out of here. So it's walking into connection with that kind of care is a little bit like walking into a really grand cathedral. The ceilings are not where we expect them to be, as in a normal room. There's a different kind of echo, and there's really weird carvings on all the all the pillars. And I don't think there's anything wrong with the awe itself, but I do think we really need to work with being willing to be in the presence of what is awe-inspiring. And that's partly trust, partly humility, partly just getting to know my needs and letting the need speak, letting the need move me. I or this needs care, and there's care, and we let that magnet pull us instead of all those other ones. Instead of the magnets of entanglement. And so sometimes there can be a way that the wish to be with that person or to be in connection that way as a kind of longing or even absence or just a pull. To live with the pull can be really valuable. It doesn't mean we should necessarily, literally call a person up on the phone every day, each hour. It could be a time period where, yes, that could happen. So I think nakedness is a helpful word there. And trust is a helpful word there. Trust that we could be naked in that cathedral space. Trust that we could be naked in the also potency of our lives, including the entanglements. And that something good can come out of a mess. It does. I don't think something good comes out of not mess. So it's not that every mess brings something good. We might learn something good from that mess. But something really precious and good needs a mess to start from. Gardening is messy, sex is messy, for example, just to go with physical, biological examples. And then also, just like in the European cathedrals, the people who were doing the carving, the ones who were masters of stone carving, were fine with there being a church and as well there being a forest, and there being what's called pagan as well as there being called what's called Christian. And it, so there are these wonderful green people carved on the pillars, so people with leaves coming out of their mouths in the church. And it does seem to be that it's there's not just mess that was just unavoidable. It can take a while to stumble along and really find that connection in yourself or with someone else or both. But then even in the connection, like you might know this is really a good connection, whether inside or outside. And there's some kind of mischief that seems to be part of what happens. And I'm afraid that might become illegal here. And so what I wish is that as students, we could really train ourselves not to be fooled. If we could know that if there is this kind of unequal, we maybe want to keep some distance and talk to a bunch of people privately and see a big picture of what's happening. So that we're not losing ourselves. In an abusive kind of situation or dynamic. But if we think that it's supposed to be clean and tidy, and that something really fruitful can come out of really neat and tidy, we are wasting our lives. And so that means we can, just the way life is, brings up situations that are unexpected and brings up situations where there's miscommunication and mishap. We can kind of get the hang of not closing down, not just going along with, not pretending that was real communication, that was miscommunication, what? Like, where's the apple? What? I was thinking of one of my teachers who's one of the more less mischievous, let's say. And then I thought, what was the best Dharma talk I heard him give? What was my favorite one? Maybe not, we don't say best, but for me, what had the best effect and the only one I remember. Was a really long, in the middle of a 20 or 30 day retreat, a really long, hilarious story that I still am not, I don't know exactly what the point was. It could go either way. And so then I also realized that a lot of the main teachings, what really has come across from that particular teacher and from all my teachers, really are more daily moments where it doesn't seem to be that they're giving a Dharma talk. So this particular teacher isn't Christian, but I think used to be and could be, kind of, if he had a Bible, it could fit. He has a free and easy radical side, and he has a kind of, sometimes he gets into an authoritarian mood. And even so, when called upon, for kindness, there it is. When someone would come with a question and they were just trembling with the terror of asking the question. The skillfulness of helping the person stay there and ask. So I will tell you the story really briefly. And apparently it's a true story. It was in a newspaper. This must have been at least 20 or 30 years ago, because I was 23, so that's 15 years ago. 25 years ago. I'm 48, what is that? 15. 25. It keeps getting better. And easier to forget how it went. Every year is better and sweeter. So there was a guy named Larry, and the way Christopher told this story, even that was funny. Unfortunately, because there was someone named Larry in the room. But Larry lived in LA, and he did, or outside of LA, and he did have this little yard in the back. And he liked to sunbathe naked. But even though he had a fence, he felt like the neighbors could see over. And so he thought, how can I get some privacy with my lounge chair and my nakedness? And so he went to the Salvation Army store, where they had these kind of weather balloons. And he got them, and he got the helium machine, and he brought it home. And he put them on his lounge chair, and he got on with his clothes off. And he started rising up. And he didn't stop rising up. And he didn't stop rising up. And he started floating out over the Pacific Ocean. And I think you can imagine how, especially after about 14 days of being on silent retreat, sitting, how much tension could be released if this story would be stretched out over 45 minutes. And he had to be rescued and fined by the Coast Guard. He was fined for trespassing.
Oh, God.
I don't know if it was U.S. airspace or what he was trespassing, but he was fined for trespassing. I don't know if he was also fined for public, what is that called?
Indecency.
So I just wanted to make it clear that it's not just messy, but there's sometimes a need for a kind of deliberate joke or a mischief or a mishap. Partly because we're so not naked. We can feel that we're so naked, and you know, we think it's our skin. We've been wearing it so long. And because there is something in us that can find a willingness to be naked, to not go back to the same old routine, when fearful, when threatened, when bored, etc. There can be something that's willing to go beyond what we can do. And sometimes life events happen to help us, like, start unraveling that suit. And sometimes in a deep friendship with ourselves or with somebody else, there can be a kind of twist. And I think what works well is if we ourselves feel willing to find our own sense of humor and our own sense of mischief. Mischief that's all about kindness. It doesn't have any meanness in it, but it's so kind that it's willing to bear the brunt of our own indignity. Like, what? You took off my suit. Or you saw through it. And so as we're settled now more into retreat, we can also start to accept, like, not to think that we have to just keep going in a straight line in any way, so that rest might uncover, you know, a new wish to just whirl. Or you might lie down and feel like you're being electrified. Or you might just notice your own hand on your own cup. Well, unless you paid the dollar, it's not your own cup. But the kind of love that can be there, that you just kind of spy in that hand of Tao, hand of Dharma. Is there any question or anything anyone wants to share?
There's a phrase of a song that someone wrote that really notices me, that describes some of what you're saying. It is, in our defenselessness, our safety lies.
Say that again.
In our defenselessness, our safety lies.
So the kindness that can help us recognize our defenselessness. And I think we could even go on and say two kinds of safety. So as the defenses fall apart, the suit unravels, and we discover the joy of nakedness, so to say, the joy of not reacting in the same way again, of not having a button to be pushed, of it starts to be funny when someone tries to put us down or whatever. Then our responsiveness in kindness can be more clever than clever. It can preempt a situation. It can respond in a way that doesn't make it worse, but also protects. And then there's the deep safety that we can really be in touch with, that unharmability, even through death. So a kind of dance that's better at living than we are, than our habits or conditioning is. And it's in touch with, and it's free because of our deep untouchability, our deep unshakability. Anyone else? Anyone else? So there's, I'm really tempted to read this one poem. I think I'll read the real poem first, and then if we have time for the funny real poem. This is a poem called Gift by Czeslaw Miloš. A day so happy. That's a sentence. A day so happy. So I'll interject a little bit at first and then. Where we don't even need to finish the sentence. That little confirmation is requested or required or even thought of. And a day so happy might be actually a moment. So when we read the poem, it might be later on. It's actually a poem about a moment. It's not about a day. But a day so happy, it has its, takes up space, that happiness. It's allowed. A day so happy. Fog lifted early. I worked in the garden. Hummingbirds were stopping over honeysuckle flowers. There was no thing on earth I wanted to possess. So the poem called Gift. There was no thing on earth I wanted to possess. That defenselessness that is safety. A day so happy. Fog lifted early. I worked in the garden. Hummingbirds were stopping over honeysuckle flowers, over nothing special flowers. There was no thing on earth I wanted to possess. I knew no one worth my envying him. Whatever evil I had suffered, I forgot. It's a different kind of forgetting. To think that once I was the same person did not embarrass me. In my body, I felt no pain. When straightening up, I saw the blue sea and sails. So the presence of happiness and the real gift that we would happily let it take up all our space is actually absence of. There was no thing on earth I wanted to possess. I knew no one worth my envying him or her. Whatever evil I had suffered, I forgot. To think that once I was the same person did not embarrass me. In my body, I felt no pain. When straightening up, I saw the blue sea and sails. So letting life, letting connection take away, and letting our forgetting flip from forgetting what we usually forget, what doesn't grab our attention. We just forget it. We keep getting grabbed by what grabs our attention. And we forget what doesn't grab our attention, what's not in our face, what doesn't hurt. But we can feel in the poem how natural it is. It happens. And it could be that there's pain, but in my body I felt no pain. It's not an ignoring of or an avoidance of. It's just not felt in the same way. And also how it was just a moment. He was gardening, however long. When straightening up, I saw the blue sea and sail. So it's in that intimate moment, and then it's also everywhere. There's that vastness and horizon, and also that the warm earth and the simple flowers, just honeysuckle. He probably didn't plant that. The other gardener in the room laughs. So I'll save the funny poem. That was called, I think, The Gift or A Gift. Let me see. Or just Gift, maybe.
Will that be posted?
I think it looked like it was easy to post. Now, is the printer working? Or?
Yes.
Okay. I might have taken out the... Gift. It's just Gift. Just Gift. Czesław Miłosz. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. May our deep heart move us and move through us in dedication to what matters, in a momentum towards liberation for all. Thank you for being here.